Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week, our guest is Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut. Remember, we love taking your questions, so write to politicswarroom@gmail.com or send a tweet to @Politicon for next week's show. Now, we're going to get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. You also can get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. Tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And please, please check out the links to our sponsors, 3-Day Blinds and Miracle Made, in our show notes. We thank you for supporting our sponsors. It really helps make this podcast happen. We have an important announcement for you. This is a contest for you listeners. We want you to vote on the most dangerous of the Trump administration's inner circle. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast, and go to the Politics War Room show notes, and there will be a link. Click on that link, and it will be a voting page where you can express your opinion on the most dangerous of the Trump inner circle. These are the contestants: Pam Bondi, the Attorney General; Brendan Carr, the FCC Chairman; Tulsi Gabbard; Pete Hegseth, the Defense Secretary; RFK Jr. of HHS; Howard Lutnick of Commerce; Stephen Miller, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff; Kash Patel of the FBI; Marco Rubio of the State Department; and Russell Voigt, the OMB Director. You can just make your opinion and make your voice heard. These are tough choices, I know, but vote for one. And you can add a comment if you want, and please tell us where you're from. And in the weeks ahead, James and I will announce the outcome and express our views. And you can also write in someone, although I think our top 10 list, you know, is awful good. So this is going to be fun. Please, please vote on the most dangerous of the Trumpites. In the United States Senate, there is no more outspoken critic of Donald Trump than Connecticut Democratic Senator Chris Murphy. We are so pleased to have you with us, Senator. Thank you. You expressed deep concerns over strikes on the Iranian facilities, but the White House and your colleagues like Lindsey Graham are doing high fives, claiming we eliminated or at least severely set back Iran's nuclear aspirations. We show they no longer can respond forcefully, and that Donald Trump orchestrated a ceasefire and a potentially rearranged politics of the Middle East. What's wrong about that picture?
Well, great to be with you guys again. What's wrong with it is that none of it is true. Donald Trump lied to the country. That's not unexpected or surprising. But, you know, we should have a higher bar when it comes to telling the truth about national security intelligence, because when you fudge and lie about national security intelligence, you end up getting the United States into war. And what Donald Trump said over the weekend is that these strikes had obliterated Iran's nuclear program. Marco Rubio said on TV that we set it back at least a year. It turns out that neither of those things are true. In fact, fact, we probably only set back their nuclear program a couple months. Their uranium, their enriched uranium, was not at the sites we bombed. And, you know, we spent hundreds of millions of dollars for an operation that didn't actually achieve its objective. We have put our forces in the region at huge risk. We have, at least in the interim, potentially scuttled the chances for a diplomatic agreement. There are Israelis who have been killed, there are Iranians who have been killed, and for what? A failed mission. Not because the military didn't, you know, do its job. It was just going to be very hard to try to destroy a bunker that was that deeply buried. So, yeah, they lied about the intelligence. And ultimately, we are probably worse off today, not better off, because of these strikes.
Do you think he was had by Benjamin Netanyahu?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. You know, Netanyahu has sort of personal and domestic political reasons for carrying out the war in Gaza in the way that he has, and for carrying out these operations inside Iran. And, you know, we were at the negotiating table with the Iranians. We were reportedly making progress. That was a threat to Netanyahu. Netanyahu's domestic political coalition probably can't survive if Donald Trump were to execute a nuclear agreement with Iran. So right as those talks were happening, without getting any permission or sign off from the United States, he sends missiles into Iran. That scuttled the negotiations. So now Trump couldn't be part of the negotiations. I don't think at that moment Trump was committed to joining them. But once he was watching Fox News for a couple nights and saw that Fox News was, you know, praising Netanyahu's strikes and that they were tactically going well in the early days, he decided he just wanted in on the action. He just wanted to be praised by Fox News as well. I think that's probably the beginning and the end of the reason that Trump decided to join in these strikes. He clearly didn't do any complicated or nuanced national security analysis, because if he had, he would have probably known that they were not likely going to be successful enough to do much long-term damage to the program.
You have noted that every military plan this century starts off looking great, and then there's the day after. What is your greatest fear of the day after danger this time?
Yeah. I just think it's important to underline that there is a war industry in this town that profits off of war, and it often gets its way. And then we have our military, who are so capable, but their capability and their optimism is also their Achilles heel. And we just need to be honest about that. The military believes that they can do everything and anything, and that's in part why they're so good. But it also often in the Middle East causes them to overestimate the political impact of military power. And that's why we've gotten Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, Yemen, all badly wrong. Really, not a single military plan went as the military said it would in any of those theaters. My biggest worry, of course, is that Iran does strike in a way that gets Americans killed. That could happen in the Middle East, but let's be honest, it could also happen in the United States. And in that case, we would have to strike back. And then we're in, you know, an ongoing war with a serious military power in the Middle East. And that's something that no American wants. I mean, nobody in America, you know, except for that defense industrial power, is looking for a new war in the Middle East. That's the biggest worry.
Let's talk about Iran for a moment. You certainly have expertise here. The clerics are, they have incredibly educated, smart people. They're scientists, built their own bomb or enrichment. They didn't have to go elsewhere for help. But is it realistic to expect when this 86-year-old cleric dies, a better regime, or anything that would be different than what they've been for the last, I guess, you know, 45 years?
Well, I mean, this regime is pretty damn evil. I mean, they absolutely want to wipe Israel off the map if they could get away with it. They support terrorist groups in the region that have killed a lot of Americans. Remember, for most of the Iraq war, when the United States was there, the Supreme Leader was, you know, running a campaign to hunt and kill U.S. troops. You know, there's no doubt this is an evil group that is completely adversarial to U.S. interests, but that doesn't mean that it couldn't get worse. And again, that is the other risk here, that these strikes, especially if they were to continue, ends up with Iran plummeting into civil war. And if that occurs, the war itself may be so destabilizing to be an immediate threat to the United States, but you could end up with somebody on the other side who is even more radical than the existing supreme leader, who, you know, absolutely decides that they are going to build a nuclear program and buries it so far underground that nobody can ever get to it. We should be careful when rooting for a regime change in Iran.
James.
So, Senator, thank you. I'm going to read to you a paragraph, and I'll ask you to respond to it. The clear judgment of the U.S. intelligence community, open paren, IC, close parens, is that Iran is not building a nuclear weapon, and its leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, has not authorized a nuclear weapons program. Director of National Security Tulsi Gabbard, the nation's top intelligence official, said so publicly on March 25th, for the record, that's exactly 3 months ago, 2025, quote, "The intelligence community continues to assess that Iran is not building a nuclear weapon, and Supreme Leader Khamenei has not authorized the nuclear weapons program he suspended in 2003, Gabbard asserted in her opening statement." Now, Trump says, "I don't believe her." So is Tulsi Gabbard right that our intelligence community has determined that they're not building one and one has not been authorized? Was she accurate in saying that, as far as you know, as a member of the Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate?
So, James, you know how complicated this question is. So okay. It is technically true that Gabbard is right, that the Supreme Leader has not made the decision to pursue a nuclear weapon. And she has stated that publicly.
Since 2003, right?
But it is also true that Iran doesn't have a civilian nuclear program. So when they are engaged in enriching uranium up to 60%, that is only so that they have the optionality to go to a bomb really quickly. So it's a little bit like splitting hairs to say Iran has not decided to get a nuclear weapon. When folks say that, you know, you're moving to the 10 or 5 yard line, but you haven't decided to score a touchdown, you know, the analogy is not perfect, but it is true that when you get to 60% enriched uranium, you know, you're pretty close to a bomb. And if you decided to get one, you could get one fairly fast. So yes, since 2003, the Iranian leadership has said, we are not going to make a nuclear weapon, but they have also decided to get really close to a nuclear weapon. Both things are true.
So, as I understand, under the Joint Comprehensive Agreement, they were allowed, with inspectors, which was working, I'm sorry, an enrichment level of something like 60%. All right? Has Iranian nuclear policy, to your knowledge, changed between 2003 and 2025?
So you're right. I mean, first, the bottom line is that why these strikes are so unforgivable is that there was another option. Iran has consistently been willing to engage in a diplomatic peace agreement in which they keep their nuclear program, you know, really low level and commit to, you know, being years away from a bomb. That was the Obama agreement, and that was the agreement that they were negotiating. In fact, the Obama agreement said that you can't enrich beyond 5%, so nowhere actually even close to 60%, and Iran allowed inspectors so you could verify all of that. Now, what happened when Trump pulled out of the agreement? And when he starts sort of showering affection on their enemies in the region, like the Saudis, yes, at that point, the Iranians said, let's start enriching way beyond 5%. Let's get all the way up to 60%. So things did change when Trump shattered the nuclear agreement. Iran did get closer to a weapon, but they basically telegraphed to Trump as soon as he came into office, we're willing to go back to the old agreement. We're willing to take 60% back down to 5%. And that's literally the discussion that they were having that Netanyahu blew up intentionally scuttled those diplomatic agreements because for domestic political reasons, Netanyahu needed a war.
So I'm going to try to frame this as a disagreement that Alan and I have, and I'm going to try to frame the disagreement as honestly as I can.
and I'm going to settle it.
No, you're in a contract.
You're the decider.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Al says that every president that comes in has an opening program, and from President Reagan to President Clinton to President Obama to President Biden, even President Bush 43, it always passes at the end of the day. It's a lot of hem and hawing and conference committees and take this out and put this in. But the consequences of failure are just too draconian for a political party to do this. Is that a fair assessment, Al?
It is.
I think that this thing is in more trouble than we think. And the divisions in there are really deep. And in one of the things that I know that you're very aware of that's really causing a headache is this SALT stuff. But they also have Medicare reimbursement. And I'm not sure that they're going to get there. History says bet on Al. You're watching this go. You obviously have colleagues on the other side of our, hear House people and stuff. How do you assess their chances of eventually cobbling something together?
I mean, history says bet on Al. The nature of the current Republican Party, right, which is effectively a cult, says bet on Al. But I actually think this thing is in more trouble than people think. I actually agree. And there are examples where, an administration comes in with a head of steam on one topic and they don't get it. It doesn't mean they don't get a big achievement. Clinton gets his big, tax package, but he doesn't get his health care bill. Trump in the first term doesn't get the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, but he gets his tax cut. So, if they don't get this, they'll get something. But they're in a real tough spot because the Senate is going to have to make adjustments to this in order to get the votes. They're going to have to dial down the Medicaid cuts. They are going to have to dial down the adjustments on state and local taxes. Some of the goodies in the bill that got it across the finish line in the House just have to come out because our Senate rules don't allow you to do things that don't have a budgetary impact. This thing's going to have to go back to the House, and they have no margin for error. And so I don't think this is a foregone conclusion. And this place, you guys aren't here, but right now this place is crawling with activists. There are people with wheelchairs around every corner of this place, who are going to lose their Medicaid. And I remember this similar feeling in 2017 when everybody said they were going to pass the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, because of course they were. It's all they talked about for 10 years. And then they didn't, because they just missed the number in the Senate. It was close, but they just missed it. And then they just had to move on to something else. The level of activity in this place right now feels similar to 2017. So yeah, I mean, if I had to put money on it, I'd probably still bet that they pass something, but it may end up being very different than what they're doing right now, what they're looking for right now.
And then we'll get to the definition of what something, we get something, is that something qualify as something, or is it? Senator Warren has said that she agrees in a clean vote, she'd vote to abolish the debt limit. Would Senator Murphy vote with Senator Warren on abolishing the debt limit?
Not right now. No, I'm not going to get rid of the debt limit when the immediate impact is to allow them to get away with a massive transfer of wealth from the poor to the middle class. I mean, yeah, in absence of this immediate crisis, in the long run, that might be good policy. But but getting rid of the debt limit is part and parcel of their plan to kill people in this country. So
I want to make clear that even though I think they're going to pass something, I think this is a terrible bill.
Punditry is different than
one mistake Republicans just can't get over. They just can't. It's going on for 20 years. Is they think that Medicare is popular and Medicaid is not. They don't understand that Medicaid is just as popular as Medicare, that 40% of births, rural hospitals, nursing homes, and you're talking about they have to wiggle their way out of this. They can only do it by duplicity.
25% of Americans are on Medicaid. And of course, most people don't know it as Medicaid. It's a different name in most states. It's Husky Care in Connecticut. It's Badger Care in Wisconsin, but 25% of Americans are on Medicaid. And when you look at the polling, it's stunning. I mean, more people think that you should be expanding Medicaid than think that you should be protecting Medicaid. And almost nobody wants Medicaid cut. So this is like horrible politics for them. The numbers continue to sink in terms of the number of people that want it. It's only the super hardcore Trump supporters at this point that are asking for this bill. And those numbers are going to get worse and worse every day that it lingers out there. And it's going to linger because whatever they pass in the Senate, I think, is going to have a hard time in the House. And that'll be a whole nother set
of
drama.
I think if they have to go back to the House, they're dead. I mean, I don't know that they can cut a deal that the House will support. But if you have to go back to the House again, then I might change my punditry on this. Let me ask you, switch subjects for a sec. New York City mayor's race yesterday, have any impact on the National Democratic Party?
I hope so. I mean, what did we see? We saw a candidate who was relentlessly focused on the unfairness of the economy, right? Who talked about power, who's got it and who doesn't have it every day, who had big solutions, some that were outside of the mainstream, but had big, bold solutions to reorder economic power, who stayed focused on that message, who didn't get distracted by the social and cultural issues that, you know, can sometimes get in the way of us building a big tent, who was authentic, who didn't listen to the pollsters, who just said what he thought, even though some of his views were definitely like not inside the 40-yard lines, who was young, who was not in the establishment, who was good at short form video, but also did the long form interviews. I mean, like, that's the recipe to me. I mean, nobody's going to copy him. But yeah, if you aren't aggressively attacking the unfairness of the economy, if you aren't talking about costs every day, if you aren't being authentic and being willing to be who you are and take risks, you're not going to win. As a Democrat now in 2026 or in 2028. So yeah, I hope people watch what happened there.
Well, the other message was that the people want, people with fresh ideas and fresh faces. Several months ago, you said you supported Democratic leader Chuck Schumer, but tactics had to change. Senator Schumer would be 76 years old starting in the next Congress. Republicans are already making an issue. Would it be better if the senator, as a predecessor, Robert Byrd, did many decades ago, said, this is my last term as leader, you know, and went on to become perhaps a powerful committee chair or leader. Would the Democratic Party do better with a younger leadership in the Senate?
I think the hardest job in this place is either senator, House majority or minority leader. I think the bigger problem, so I support Chuck in part because, I mean, he's got an issue inside our caucus. Our caucus has not made a decision about how urgent this moment is. There are some folks like me, many of us, who believe that the most important thing is stopping the corruption and the destruction of our democracy. I do not take for granted that we are going to have an election in 2026. So yeah, I think we've got to act with urgency every day. There are others who think that, you know, this is pretty bad, but it's just, you know, a different version of normal politics. And so let's, be careful. Let's not act with too much haste. Let's not create any crises, and we'll win in the midterms. So that's a difficult job for any leader, to balance a caucus in which there's, you know, not consensus on the core strategic question. And historically, you know, Chuck has done a pretty good job of figuring out how to balance a diverse caucus. And I'm, you know, just not convinced there's, you know, right now at this moment, somebody else who can step in.
James.
Senator Murphy, first of all, I know you know him, but I really want you to give my best to Coach Gino at UConn.
Yeah.
I was so honored. He said some really nice things about me at an event. And I think this guy is arguably the greatest coach in collegiate history. And I mean John Wooden, I mean Nick Saban, I mean a lot of people. If you look at what he's done over a period of time, what a program and what women's basketball was and what it is today, man, I my hat's off to Coach Gino. I got to tell you that right now, man.
Yeah, he's magic. And again, you know, I don't mean to marry the two conversations, but, you know, authenticity matters in life, it matters in politics, and it matters in coaching. And Gino is, you know, just who he is, the same person publicly that he is behind closed doors. You know, for a while, they just had such a monopoly on recruitment. I mean, every year the number one player was coming to UConn. That's not the case any longer, right? There's parity in recruitment. LSU, South Carolina, you know, all these programs now are getting good recruiting classes, and Geno's still able to win in part because he builds a culture in which these players can be themselves and yet still have a cohesion as a team. No, he's going to go down as a great, and he loves Connecticut. He's loyal to Connecticut, which matters so much to us, a state that always has a little bit of an inferiority complex living between Boston and New York. He's just an icon.
We won the college World Series. I know about insecurity and feeling like you've been forgotten. Yeah. So I said it before, I'll turn back to Alec, old political consultant, I can't help but give advice. Please look at the veterans' cuts as a front and center issue. Please look at John Delavolpe's poll of 18 to 30-year-olds, which was the number one issue, more than student loans or more than cost of college or more than anything. And I think John's a very good pollster. And I just think we got to do a real good job of putting this veteran stuff front and center. And I think the reason that 18 to 30s, there's not many veterans at 18 to 30, I think they say, if they'll cut a veteran, what will they do to you? If you're going to take a chief petty officer in the Navy whose back is, you know, strained out and not take care of him, what are they going to do to you? You have no chance. And I do think this is a great front and center issue for us. And I just want this my little
I will take your advice and just add an element to it. I mean, what's so unforgivable is how, you know, Democrats have allowed Republicans to steal the flag from us, right? To steal the sort of concept of patriotic Americanism. And these guys are frauds. And this is maybe the chief evidence of their fraud is how do you claim that you love America? How do you make the claim that you are the party that best represents the values of the country when you are defunding the programs that help our veterans, that you are leaving them behind when they come back home? And so it exposes, you know, their, I think, really unforgivable efforts to wrap themselves in the flag when you talk about the way that they are treating veterans. And by the way, they're hurting veterans at so many different levels. It's not just that they're, you know, cutting services, but when you, you know, target the federal workforce, you know, when you put them all in trauma, as Trump's OMB director says he wants to do, you're putting veterans in trauma because veterans are 3% of the overall workforce. They're 24% of the federal workforce. So they are literally just trying to make tens of thousands of veterans' lives miserable when they are targeting the federal workforce every day for cuts and for layoffs.
And Senator, we should never forget that it was Donald Trump that called fallen soldiers losers and suckers. You have been a terrific guest. We know how busy you are. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
Keep the good fight going.
Thanks, guys. You guys are awesome. Thanks for having me back.
Tell you, it's really big, and if I would do it, I'd do it right now. But if you're like me, you go to bed earlier than other people. You got to have these blinds and keep the light out, and also, you know, daytime comes too early in the morning. Don't just get them right now. This is when they're the most valuable.
That's for sure, because nothing is worse than getting up to close the shades at the blinding light of dawn. I'm sorry, I want another hour of sleep. You wonder, it's 2025, so why aren't my blinds smart and automated? Luckily, we have good news. There's a better way to buy blinds, shutters, shades, and drapery called 3-Day Blinds. They are the leading manufacturers of custom window treatments in the United States, and right now, if you use our URL, 3dayblinds.com/warroom, they have a buy one, get one 50% off deal. Now, we shop for almost everything at home, so shop for blinds there too. 3-Day Blinds, local, professionally trained design consultants, average 10 plus years of experience in providing expert guidance on the right blinds for you, right in the comfort of your home. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no obligation quote the same day. We love that expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles it all. That's a real expert team. Measuring and installing blinds can be a big challenge, so they design, measure, and install for you. That way you can sit back, relax, and leave the heavy lifting to the pros. You know, once you hear about them, you're going to know it's time to upgrade. Their blinds come in tons of great styles, so it's an easy sell in the family. With three-day blinds, you know, you can be excited to get better sleep. Opening and closing our blinds from the comfort of our beds. Alexa, I slept great. Now let there be light. We know you'll like three-day blinds as much as we all do. Don't wait. Transfer your home with three-day blinds today. Right now, get quality window treatments that fit your budget with three-day blinds. Head to 3dayblinds.com/war room for their buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. For a free, no charge, no obligation consultation, that's head to 3dayblinds.com/war room. One last time, that's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to the number 3daiblinds.com/war room. The link is in our show notes.
Get your light right with 3-Day Blinds.
You know, in a major upset, Zohran Mamdani, a 33-year-old state assemblyman and socialist, defeated former Governor Andrew Cuomo to win the Democratic nomination for mayor of New York City. Mamdani ran a brilliant campaign, creative use of social media, tirelessly campaigning day and night, building a committed ground game, and focusing on the cost of living for average citizens. He even proposes the city take over grocery stores. But if Mamdani prevails in the fall, and there is a general election, his greatest gift may be to the Republicans. The Democrats, they will charge at a party of socialists of defunding the police, a position that Mamdani actually backed away from, of the government taking over private business and speaking favorably of the Palestinian Intifada. But prior to the results, cable news was full of a political analyst saying Mamdani versus Cuomo is an indicator of which way the Democratic Party is heading. I think the reality actually is Cuomo was yesterday. He was associated with corruption and accused of sexual harassment. And I think just as the weakness of Joe Biden paved the way for Donald Trump, Cuomo was the perfect foil for Mamdani.
Okay, well, let's start. Yes, he said a lot of things, and he did walk back defund the police. I'll give him credit there. In terms of his idea of public-owned, city-owned grocery stores, all right, so I go to New York a lot, and y'all, come on, James, you don't really see it because you just go to Soho and Upper East Side and the West Side or, you know, Midtown or whatever. Okay, great. I do go through neighborhoods all over New York, and I can't tell you how many of these grocery stores they are. I think they call them bodegas. They're literally on every block. I don't even understand what he's talking about. Is he talking about maybe a food, expanding food pantries? I don't know. And the one other thing he has said that he has not walked back is that he was for global infitada. Well, I don't think that's a good idea. But hopefully this guy, I hope, he obviously represents dissatisfaction, particularly among urban Democratic primary voters. Maybe he'll turn into be a very skilled candidate that can skillfully navigate some of his, what I refer to as esoteric positions. I'd remind one thing. He won the primary. There's a general election coming. I think Andrew's sending off noises that he's not going to run in a general election as an independent. So there might be a huge, I don't know the ballot access thing, but it might be a huge undertaking to have somewhat of a left of center independent candidate run for mayor. You know, New York has some history of electing Republican mayor, like I'll elect Curtis Sylvia for sure. But it's certainly possible they could.
There's a lot of baseball left here. That's the only point I'm going to make. We got a lot of baseball to play.
Well, I certainly agree with that. And New York City, for all its attractions, is not America. When Rudy Giuliani was elected mayor, it didn't usher in a slew of pro-choice, law and order Republicans. Nor did Michael Bloomberg, who actually was an excellent mayor, pretend the plethora of billionaires or Eric Adams been an invitation for a bunch of corrupt mayors. So I think to say that New York City election is an indicator of what's going to happen elsewhere is just off base. However, I do believe that Republicans will jump on this. Elise Stefanik, a woman who never lets truth get in the way of her demagoguery, said just last night that this proves that the Democratic Party is now the party of communists. I mean, she's going to take the socialists and run up them. Well, he's not a communist, but he does have some issues that the Republicans will love to talk about.
Yeah, I wish I had more of your attitude and less of mine. I can't imagine that Fox is going to be talking about anything else. I can't imagine that any Democratic candidate anywhere in the country is going to be able to escape answering this question. I think the microphones will follow them around. I think that they're going to pound this home as hard as they possibly can. And it's also, you know, honestly, given the, everybody's going to try to do, let's look at our nominees in Virginia and New Jersey. And great. I mean, that has to be a big part of our answer. And depending on who comes in a general election, there's a lot of Democrats going to have a hard go at this. I think it's a potentially damaging event.
I do too, although I think that Mikey Sherrill and Abigail Spanberger will go a long way come November in mitigating that. But
I hope so. That's my answer when I'm asked about this, or look at New Jersey, look at Virginia.
Right.
But just wait to see what the third party candidate is too.
Right, and it sure as hell shouldn't be Andrew Cuomo. He is spent. He is yesterday. He is discredited. He spent a fortune, and he was soundly rejected. So, right. and I do think there is Joe Biden didn't have Andrew Cuomo's problems, and Andrew Cuomo wasn't as old as Joe Biden, but I think they were the same story. When you run a weak candidate,
sometimes the Democratic Party's attitude is take this and eat it because you gotta eat it. And people don't like that. They saw it with Biden, and now they're seeing it with Cuomo. Well, no, I don't have to eat that.
Right, right.
And that's a legitimate, and, you know, it goes into this kind of generational thing, too. I mean, it's just not ideological here. It's also generational, and its effect is going to reverberate throughout the party.
Yeah.
Can I tell you, some chance it might be a positive thing? Yes, it could be. But could it be not so positive? Yes, it could be.
And James, I agree with you that taking over the grocery stores in New York City is highly dubious. It's not realistic at all. The fact that he focused on the cost of living was smart. He did that with that. He did it with rent control. He did it with rent stabilization. And that is an issue that does transcend New York City. And that's, of course, what the Democrats did not do in 2024. But I think this guy creates probably more problems than opportunities for the Democrats.
And, you know, what happens is that they're going to keep unearthing stuff. I mean, he's got to get an umbrella answer for all of this. You know, Harris had the same problem. Remember?
Yep.
Harris was for all this stuff. That this, I don't know what you call it.
2019, right.
That she was all for that. So he let's see if Pope, and look, if this guy is skillful enough and he projects youth and energy and he's give us something, but I would recommend reading John Chait on Global Infantata. It's not a good idea.
Okay. All right. We will be revisiting this story often in the months, maybe years ahead.
And if you know it's hot, you know it's going to continue to be hot, you know it's going to get hotter, why not get these sheets, start using them right now? Because the hottest part of summer, we hadn't gotten here yet. We hadn't gotten into July and August. And so if I were you, I would advise you to get on board early and often, because it's hot out there, and the forecast is it's going to not only stay hot, it's going to get even hotter.
Yeah. Because sleeping at the right temperature is a critical way to feel rested the next day. Now, if you wake up too hot or too cold, we highly recommend you check out Miracle Made bed sheets so you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. Plus, the silver lining prevents 99.7% of bacterial growth, which means Miracle sheets require 3 times less laundry because they stay clean and fresh 3 times longer. So stop sleeping on bacteria that can clog your pores and cause breakouts and acne. Sleep clean with Miracle instead. Trust us, with no more gross odors, life is a whole lot better for your household. The NASA-inspired temperature-regulating silver-infused fabrics truly give you maximum comfort in any weather, and they make pillowcases and comforters too. So join us in getting better sleep every night. Not only are Miracle sheets luxuriously comfortable, they don't have the high price tag of other luxury brands. Miracle sheets feel nicer than bed sheets used by some 5-star hotels, so it's a vacation every time you get into bed. So upgrade your sleep as the weather heats up. Try Miracle.com/war room to try Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use our promo War Room at checkout, you'll get a free 3-piece towel set and save an extra 20%. Now, Miracle's so confident in their product that it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you get a full refund. So upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/war room and use the code War Room to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40%. Again, that's trymiracle.com/war room to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode, and you can look for the link in our show notes.
Start enjoying your time in the sheets with Miracle Made.
Emil Bove's qualification for his post as Principal Deputy Attorney General were simple. He was one of Trump's criminal lawyers and would be unquestionably loyal to the chief. He has displayed those colors. First, he was charging that the prosecution of those insurrectionists who violently stormed the Capitol on January 6th to try to overturn an honest election, Bove said, was a grave injustice. And he fired those Justice Department officials who were devoted to the rule of law. Next, he cut a deal to dismiss the criminal indictments of New York City Mayor Eric Adams in return for Adams agreeing to cooperate with Trump's immigration deportation. That prompted the resignation of Danielle Sassoon, the acting U.S. attorney, a former Antonin Scalia law clerk and Federalist Society star, an honest conservative who refused to go along with an unlawful deal. And this week, a whistleblower, formerly in the Justice Department's Immigration Office, revealed that planes were set to take off spiriting migrants to a prison in El Salvador this spring. And there was likely to be, however, a court order halting those flights. The response of the principal deputy attorney general in the United States Justice Department, once the home of Robert Kennedy, Robert Jackson, Elliot Richardson. His response, quote, "We'll tell the court, fuck you and ignore any order," end quote. So what's Bove's reward for his contempt for the rule of law? Trump has nominated him to be a federal judge on the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. I don't need to say anything more, James.
Well, okay, I'll try to, you know, live up to the stupidity of what you just said, which I've got to admit is a very high bar, but I'm going to try. There's a position in the United States government and within the Department of Homeland Security that is responsible for counterterrorism in the United States. I don't have to tell you how important that position is, how much professionalism it requires, how much knowledge, how much interagency cooperation, all the shit you hear. So I want to read the Wikipedia entry for you for the new person responsible for counterterrorism in the Department of Homeland Security. Take a deep breath. Thomas Fugate, born 2002 or 2003. Well, who in born in this century in the United States doesn't even know their goddamn birth year? I mean, you're not Minnie Minoso, okay? I mean, you're somebody like a Dominican guy. It might be, you know, 41 years old, and, you know, he says he's 36. But usually, if you're born in this century in the United States, your birth date is pretty known thing. Is an American political appointee serving the United States Department of Homeland Security, whose responsibilities were expanded to include serving as the director of the Center for Prevention Program and Partnerships, called CP3. I thought it was about Chris Paul. he completed an undergraduate degree in politics and law from the University of Texas at San Antonio. Okay, that in other words, he graduated in 2024, right? We're 2025, so 13 months out of undergraduate school at UT San Antonio. He worked as an intern for the Heritage Foundation. Oh, wow. That, you know, you're an intern.
That's a qualification.
He succeeded counterterrorism scholar Bill Braniff, who resigned from cutting the staff at the Senate. Now, Braniff is a graduate of the United States Military Academy, is a graduate of Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, has years and years of record as in knowing about and fighting counterterrorism. Okay, this guy is, by any stretch of the imagination, a stud. He also worked on Donald Trump 2024 presidential campaign. And get this, this is how qualified this man is. He attended the 2024 Republican National Committee.
Okay, that's it.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it. That's it. Now, I there's some supplemental things that I did find out. He worked in the produce section of the HEB store in Austin. I have to tell you, the HEB stores are great, okay? And they have a very nice celery display. They're very good at that. Now, maybe he was part of the celery display team. But I'm not through yet because I'm going to get this man a qualification. He also worked for a landscaping company. He mowed lawns. So he stacked produce. He mowed lawns. He has a definite relationship with vegetation. I suspect his mind is also vegetative. But this is the guy. This is the guy. And, you know, stand by, because just when you think you can't get any crazier, They're gonna one up you. They're gonna one up you.
James, you at least equaled my outrage at a minimum.
In two, you take them together. Don't take them in isolation. Take them together, and it adds up to more than you think. And it's all over the fucking government.
It does that. Hey, now for our listener questions, James. Laura in Raleigh, North Carolina asks simply, what are your wishes for the Democratic Party when we win the next election? I assume she's talking about 26.
Basta. Enough. Stop. You know, we're not, even if we win, you know, we seriously do have some power now. We clearly have the power to stop things, and we have the power to investigate. I would limit the number of investigations I have, but I would certainly have them, and I would take the one that delivers the most potency politically. I would certainly have hearings on Veterans Affairs, rural health care, that kind of stuff. But I'd be very selective and very strategic as to how I get it. If you were fortunate enough to get both houses, which if we can navigate this New York mayor's thing, I think we're going to win the House. And I think we would have an excellent chance in the Senate. I really do. I mean, if you look at, you know, when this did this Iran thing, there was some fear that he would be helped by it. And they came out right after it. It obliterated it. And you had, you know, Joe Scarborough even coming out. And you had people saying, and then you would hear from Democrats, you know, this is going to make him look strong. You know, I know it's all bullshit, James, but it shows this. The public does not like this.
Right.
The public does not like this. And we have to remember, because you and I remember this like that, the frickin' Berlin Wall fell. And no one gave a shit.
Right. No. That's true.
So it even if they thought it was good, it wouldn't help him much, but they don't think it's good at all. And the other thing, there's a real split in the Republican Party. It doesn't show as much in their polling numbers, but the people that are speaking out against this, man, they're not backing off at all. At all.
Okay.
It's not good for him.
Our next, Ed in Atlanta, says, what's the deal with a wide split in so many of Trump's poll numbers? Is Real Clear Politics and our averages our best bet? I've actually grown a little more suspicious of averages because there's so many ideologically attuned polling, mainly on the right, but some on the left. Look, if you look at the poll, you look at ones you think are fairly decent. I think it's kind of clear. He's got an approval rating of, you know, 44, 45, a disapproval rating of 52, 53. If anything, it's hardened among the MAGAs and it's softened among those people who made the difference in electing him. And what's really remarkable is 5 months into this administration that has done so many incredible things, it ain't a whole lot different than it was in February. So maybe that's where we're going to be for a while.
You know, I don't know. I have to go back and look, but the polls I trust are showing in more recent ones, he's clocking in up to 44. And I'll say this about Real Clear Politics. I use it. I know those guys. I don't think that they publish anything erroneous, but they definitely lean right.
In their stories. I'm talking about looking at their polls.
The polls that they select to put in their average. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Right. I agree. Yeah, I don't pay any attention to the average.
Only
anymore.
As good as what you poll right. into.
Right.
It. And I think these guys, you know, would not change a number, but I think they'll have a looser criteria for right wing and leaning polls.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
I'm skeptical of that stuff sometimes.
Patrick in Eugene, Oregon, ask you, James, Iran and Saudi Arabia are enemies. Is it possible Trump ordered the bombing in Iran as part of a real estate deal with the Saudi royal family?
Well, is it possible? Yeah. Hey, look, if we go back to the show last week, and, you know, I have a different view here. I think the big, beautiful bill is in some kind of trouble. And I am not part of, look, they always get it. You know, Clinton got it. You know, Reagan got it. Obama got it. Biden got it. Bush yeah. got it. It's all true. This one is increasingly difficult. And I think the thing may, and I think Trump knows that. And Trump knows that Virginia and New Jersey are coming. I think there was, you've never convinced me there was not a political motivation that pushed him over the top on this decision. Now, I think it backfired. But Trump, the one thing he does has, he has primitive survival skills. All right. If he sees something, he'll try to alter it. And I think he saw the polling on this is bad. It's getting worse. It is going to get really bad. The more this thing sits out there, the more it stinks.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And they got some problems. I'm not telling you, you know, smart money would always bet that in the end they get it through. And I think Trump strategically did this so he could say to a Republican, your president is at war. you have an obligation to stand with him, and you know we can fix all this stuff later. The bargain's powerful. He knows he's in trouble. I think this thing is actually in trouble.
As bad as it is, James, it's going to get through. Hey, Meg in Vancouver, Canada, says, why is Fox News so partisan? Was journalism always like this? You know, partisan journalism goes back to the founders. Fox began in the mid-90s as most conservatives were convinced the mainstream media was had a liberal bias. They exaggerated that, but they were convinced of that. And Fox, Rupert Murdoch, who is a genius, found a niche. They were going to be right-wing, and they had been that way. Ultimately, MSNBC decided to be left-wing. It's just that Fox has been more successful.
You know, it's a weird thing, and of course, it's enormously successful. And Murdoch and Ailes identified a market, no doubt about it. The most fascinating story I've read about Fox is after Tucker was fired, Tucker says that Murdoch called him and encouraged him to run for president. Right?
He was also encouraging Glenn Youngkin to run for president.
I understand.
So Rupert had a number of candidates.
I don't think Tucker's lying.
I may not be, but I don't know.
It's not anything I'm going to spend much time trying to uncover the real truth, but I just thought it was kind of a fascinating story. I got a big judgment against them, but they are a juggernaut, to say the least.
They sure are. Tom, who says he's from Wandering Abroad, he says the Trump administration has run roughshod through political norms and paid little price. What legal and legislative reforms are necessary so the 2026 election actually occurs and 2028 goes to the Democrats? Good question, Tom.
You know, Al, I got this a lot. I was at Chautauqua. And what happens if they call off the election? I got to tell you, this is extreme. I think there are people in this country that would take a bullet. I mean, if he somehow or another tried to say it was martial law or did some kind of extra curricular way to get around this, if you think 5 or 6 million people showing up on, you know, No King's Day, could you imagine, just imagine in your mind if you told people they couldn't vote next October, next November? I think this is a lot harder for them to pull off than it is general thing. I think there would be a genuine uprising in this country. I mean like genuine.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. John in Chicago, Illinois, says our country has not had a fair and just tax code since at least 2001. I'm not sure it was fair and just then. Is it time to rewrite the tax code, and how would you set it up? Boy, you don't know how difficult that is, John. I thought the 86 Tax Act, which lowered rates a great deal and widened the base, closed, you know, loopholes. Donald Trump hated it. I thought that was the closest we came, but it didn't take long for the vested interest to get in there and open up those loopholes. You can make it fairer. You're not going to get the kind of tax code that we all wish we had.
Yeah, you know, our dear friend Senator Bradley said it was like ants coming into the kitchen. They would just find a way. So, you know, he knew that when he authored and he and Congressman Gephardt and President Reagan signed, that whole act, which took a lot of work and a lot of sweat and a lot of everything, and of course, it was all good things that happened. It was, in the end, it was probably for naught. But
it was
a good teaching lesson, I can tell you that. They would like to, you know, get rid of the income tax, which is, to me, the greatest tax ever devised by the mind.
Oh. Mike in Centerport, New York, ask you, James, should we sell more and better weapons to Israel with a goal of letting them handle things themselves?
Well, we've sold gazillions of weapons to Israel. We have given Israel, I don't know how many billion dollars in aid over history, particularly since the Camp David Accord, in Accords in 1979. We provided Israel with the Iron Dome, which President Obama did. Okay, so let's be very clear. We have a lot of skin in the Israel game here. And as I'm told, you know, Netanyahu does not advise us. He does what he wants. And his attitude is, you know, we're a sovereign state. We'll protect our own interests. All that may or may not be true, but the state of Israel exists because President Harry Truman supported the right for the state of Israel to exist. It is, then the United States is a very close ally, and we've contributed a lot to the state of Israel. And I think that we deserve at least some consultation on their military and foreign affairs. It's, you know, you got to do what you can to protect yourself, but
you shouldn't do anything to hurt the interests of the United States either.
Well, Bibi doesn't care about that, I'm afraid, Bibi Netanyahu, but in the event. Please keep those questions coming. If we didn't get to yours this week, we'll get to it next week, or we'll certainly try to. They are so good. Don't forget to vote for the most dangerous of the Trump inner circles. Just go to our show notes and click the link. Thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, 3-Day Blinds and Miracle Made, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them. When you do, you help make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content. You also can find other shows you might enjoy on the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. Remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.